We are in the middle of a four-week series that we're calling Engaging the Kingdom, Agents of the Kingdom. Jesus came, and one of the major themes that he talked about whenever he was here was this idea of the kingdom of God, the place where God rules and reigns, and how God wants to extend that authority, that leadership throughout the world by leading us, and we do things his way, even if the world around us doesn't. And so we're asking ourselves a little bit about, practically speaking, what does it mean to live out the values of God's kingdom in a world that is opposed to those values? And we landed on three words that we're talking our way through, and those three words are justice, mercy, and humility. Last week, we talked about justice. This week, we're going to talk about mercy. Next week, we're going to talk about humility. So you can't skip next week, or I'm just going to assume you're very prideful. So this week, we're going to talk a little bit about mercy. And as we talk about mercy, I was thinking about my neighbor, Artie. My neighbor, Artie, when I was growing up, he lived there the whole time I was growing up, and he had this awful German Shepherd that actually, like, bit me in the face when I was a kid. My dad sent me over to bring this ham bone over to the dog, and the dog managed to jump over the fence to get the ham bone, ignored the ham bone, and, like, bit me in the face, which is not ideal, actually. I've never been a fan of dogs ever since, but I was supposed to go over to Artie's house every week or two because I mowed his lawn. And so one particular time during one summer, he was going to be away for 2 or 3 weeks, I forget how long, and so he paid me in advance to mow his lawn, and when he came back, 3/4 of his lawn was properly mowed. The reason for this was that 1/4 of his yard was this giant hill. And if you've spent time with a lawnmower, lawnmowers are great on flat ground. Lawnmowers are not super awesome on a hill. And so I kept stalling doing that part of the job. And to make it worse, by the way, there were a bunch of rocks in the hill. And so I had to be really careful, and it was doable with a lawnmower, but I, being a little bit of a whiner at the time, just said, you know what, I'll get back to it. I'll get to it. I'll get to it. And I forgot what day he was coming back, and I didn't get to it before he came back. And so he came over to my house. He knocked on the door, and he said, Joshua, I paid you to do my lawn, and you did not. And he was absolutely right, and I was mortified, and I offered to give him his money back because I hadn't done the job properly. And he said, no, don't worry about it. I'm not worried about the money. Just please get over and fix the job and do it right next time. And I agreed to do so, and the next time I mowed the lawn, I did it right, and it was great. But that is a great example of what mercy is all about. I was talking with Pastor Roy just before service about this idea of mercy, because I think mercy is one of those words that we all think we know what it means until you actually stop and try to actually define it. The minute you try to define mercy, mercy gets a little bit confusing. So I want to talk a little bit tonight about what the Bible means when it talks about mercy. So if you want to be kind of brainstorming, you can start jotting down for yourself, if you're a note taker, what you think mercy is all about. And then I'll talk a little bit about that in just a moment. But before we do, I want to let you know about a couple of things that are coming up just as reminders. First of all, the last day of October, Halloween, is a Wednesday night. And so every year, our church does this really fun outreach on Halloween called Light the Night. It's why we've been gathering candy. And the idea is that we set up in a couple of different neighborhoods on a couple of different properties of people who live in the church or who go to the church. We set up these little miniature carnivals where we welcome kids in. We play, let them play a bunch of games, put up a bunch of lights so that it looks welcoming. A lot of times we'll have, like, coffee for the parents, just as a way of blessing the neighborhood on this one particular night where there's lots of kind of foot traffic. And so we call this Light the Night, and that particular Wednesday night we will not have service here. Each of your small groups are going to go and serve at one of the Light the Night locations, so you guys can talk about that amongst yourselves, and that'll be great. So that is one thing. The next thing I want to make sure you know is that if you serve in any way here at the church, in any way, shape, or form, whether it is on stage or behind the scenes, a greeter, on media team, on transportation team, any way, shape, or form, this Sunday night, we have a quarterly meeting that we call LEAD. That is a really important part of serving here at the church. It's a place where a moment where we all gather together, all of us who serve, to make sure we're on the same page and to talk a little bit more about growing as leaders together as we serve. So please, please, please come to LEAD this Sunday at 6 p.m. on the second floor. And finally, every Saturday night this month at 7 o'clock, we have a prayer meeting at our Revere location. If you have never been to our Revere location, this is a great opportunity to do that. And either way, I want to challenge you to come to one of our prayer meetings if you are in any way able to, because we are excited to see what God is going to do when we ask him to do that. And so, I hope you come to that. All right, with that said, think for a moment, what do you think mercy is all about? What do you think mercy is all about? Here's our verse for tonight, Matthew chapter 5, verse 7. It says this: God blesses those who are merciful, for they will be shown mercy. God blesses those who are merciful, for they will be shown mercy. I encourage you, by the way, whenever you're looking up, you're trying to understand a topic in the Bible, you don't go to like the dictionary or dictionary.com to find out what a word means. What you do if you're trying to understand a Bible word is you go to one of the websites that you can search for that word in the Bible, like Bible.org or BibleGateway.com. You go to one of those kind of websites and you just type the word in and you search. You can search for it pretty easily. And then you start reading all the different places that word is used in the Bible and start letting all those various contexts inform you on what the word is all about. That's a little bit of what I did when I was getting ready for tonight, and I'm not going to give you all the references I was looking at, but what does the word mercy really mean? There are a couple of key things I think we need to talk about when we think about mercy. First of all, I think that we have to think of mercy as a way of living in relationships. Mercy is a way of living out our relationships. When two people are in some kind of relationship, there's always expectations, right? We just went through an Ignite class. That's our kind of part of our leadership training process here at the church. And it's interesting to me. One of the pieces of feedback we always get from folks who go through Ignite over and over and over again is, oh, that's interesting. You guys have really clear expectations. That's true. When we think about leadership, we want to be very clear about what we think that means. And so we have it all printed out and we hand it to people. Any kind of relationship you're in, there are expectations. If you are in a husband-wife relationship, there are expectations on both sides. If you are friends, there are expectations on both sides. If you're in an employer-employee relationship, there are expectations on both sides. Even some of the more general relationships that all of us are in, like God and his creation, there are expectations on both sides. Or just being a person amongst other people, there are fair expectations on both sides. And those expectations are often mutually dependent. So for example, a son or daughter can only fulfill his or her role if the parent fulfills theirs. This makes sense? So if I am in a relationship with my son and daughter. My son is 11. My daughter is 9. Well, my son will be 11 in a week and a half. But my son is 11. My daughter is 9. If I fail in my relationship with them, it will make it significantly harder for them to do what they ought to do as a son or a daughter. Does that make sense? Parents can mess that up for their kids. The same is true in an employer-employee relationship. If the employer doesn't do their responsibilities, it makes it really hard for the employee to do their responsibilities. And vice versa. If the employee completely ignores their responsibilities, it makes it very hard for the employer to do what they're supposed to do. The expectations we have, the responsibilities we have in our relationships are often mutually dependent. What does this have to do with mercy? Mercy is the idea that when you are in a relationship where each of you have expectations of the other, when the other party in the relationship fails in their expectations, you choose not to fail in yours regardless of how they act. They may no longer deserve you to fulfill your expectations. They may no longer have a right to expect you to fulfill your expectations, but you do anyway. Not because you ought to, not because you have to. All of that has been sort of canceled out if they fail in their expectations. Mercy is going in a relationship above and beyond what you ought to do, above and beyond what you have to do, doing what you choose to do, regardless of what the other person does. So what does this look like for God? God is a merciful God. If you read the Bible, this is one of the phrases that comes up over and over again. God is merciful and compassionate. What does that mean? It means that God is in a relationship with every person on earth. You, me, whether anybody knows it or not isn't really the issue. We're not talking about whether people understand they're in a relationship with God or not. But the Bible tells us that God, as a creator, has certain responsibilities for his creation, but that creation also has certain responsibilities in relationship to God. In short, creation is supposed to obey God, and God is supposed to care for his creation. Kind of a simple summary. Now, if we, as part of that creation, fail to obey God, there are inevitable consequences for our relationship with God. We create distance between us and God. And it may be that God is no longer obligated to care for us because we have abandoned him. So, for example, let's say the worst happened and I am providing a wonderful home for my children. One of my kids gets very angry and runs away. I really hope this never happens. But if they get hurt once they run away, that's not on me, is it? That's on them. I am providing what I am responsible for providing, and they have left it. Mercy is going above and beyond what I ought to be doing or what I'm responsible for. Mercy is the moment as a parent where I go out and search for my children and bring them home, even if it's their choice to have run away, even if they have abandoned the relationship with me. I go above and beyond what I'm responsible for and I search them out. God is a merciful God, the Bible tells us. When we abandoned him, when we ran away, he sought us out. He pursued us. God is a merciful God. Mercy is the choice to keep your side of the relational bargain even if the other person doesn't. Mercy is the choice to live out that relationship even if the other person doesn't. So that's part of it. It's a way of living in relationships. But it's also, and this is important, it's a way of the heart. It deeply has to do with heart. Back in the days of Jesus, there was a philosophical movement called Stoicism. We're going to get all smarty pants here for a couple of minutes, but it really is relevant, I promise. There was a philosophical movement called Stoicism, and the general idea of Stoicism was you can be the most moral version of yourself if you stay as detached as possible. The idea is don't become emotionally involved, because if you become emotionally involved, you will compromise your ability to make moral or ethical choices. This is oversimplifying things a lot. So don't look down your nose at all the Stoics at this point. They were probably smarter than us. But nevertheless, this is sort of in a nutshell, on a popular level, the essence of what Stoicism was about. Stay detached and you can be the best version of yourself. God's teaching on this is quite different. God challenges us to mercy that is driven by compassion. And compassion is inherently a willingness to allow our hearts to get involved or invested in the people around us. We allow our hearts to be vulnerable to those with whom we live, around whom we live, knowing that when you make your heart vulnerable, there is a chance that your heart will be harmed. This is beautifully caught in the life of Jesus, isn't it? Jesus knows, he opens his heart to his disciples. He leads them and trains them and mentors them for years. There comes a moment where he is betrayed by one of them and abandoned by the rest. When you open your heart, there is a chance your heart will be harmed. And the courage of compassion, the reason it takes God's power and authority and courage in our lives to be compassionate, is that we know when we open our hearts that way, there is a chance our hearts will be harmed. And so it is, mercy is this way of living in relationships that engages our heart as much as it engages our mind, as much as it engages our actions. And this is important as well. When you think of the reason I started with, it's a way of living in relationships, is because it is not just a way of thinking about another person. It's not just a mental attitude. You are not a merciful person if your mercy does not translate into action. If God had stayed in heaven and said, you know what, I feel so bad for you guys, how much you have messed up your lives. Good luck with that. This would not be mercy, that would be sarcasm. There's a difference, right? If God had not acted, he could not have claimed to be merciful. But over and over again, the story of the Bible is the story of a God who acts far beyond what justice requires, far more than justice requires of him. He acts out of a place of great compassion and mercy for people that he loves, even when they failed. And I keep coming back to this idea of mercy from God as our model. I keep coming back to this idea that we receive mercy first, because it's really important that the fountainhead, the source of our merciful activity to one another, is a belief that we have received mercy. We never want, as followers of Jesus, to set up some sort of two-tiered system where there are the good people who give mercy and the less good people who receive mercy. Right? There is nothing in the Bible that would agree with that. The Bible's general model is that we are all recipients of mercy. And so when I extend mercy to someone else, I'm just reflecting the mercy that I was already given. Mercy becomes an act of celebration. I celebrate the fact that I live in a world where God has been merciful to me, and I celebrate that by being merciful to others. And what's amazing is that when I open myself to sharing mercy with others, I can experience mercy more deeply. What is challenging is this verse that I read to you. God blesses those who are merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Sometimes I love when the Bible's super clear. This is one of those moments. Like, you know, a lot of times we talk about the fact that the Bible's confusing about certain things, and there are some verses that you read and you think to yourself, I have no idea what that means. The good news is, most of the time, that's not the case. The Bible's actually pretty clear. A lot of times, this is one of those moments. If you want God to show you mercy, you have complete control over whether that happens or not. All you have to do is show mercy to other people. Nice and simple. If you want mercy, show mercy. If you want to be a recipient of mercy, make sure you are an agent of mercy. Because the Bible tells us, there's this one great story in Matthew about a king who shows mercy to a servant, and then that servant fails to show mercy to a fellow servant, and then the king is very angry and thinks to himself, why did I bother showing you mercy if you can't pass that mercy on? And then he takes back his mercy, the king does, and that's some scary stuff right there. And so we always, always, always want to understand mercy from a place of being mercy recipients. I don't get to look at somebody else and think I'm better than them because I'm showing mercy. Even if they have sinned against me, even if they have harmed me, and let's be clear, I don't mean let's pretend they didn't harm me. We'll get to that in a second. But I am a recipient of mercy. I am on the same level as everybody around me. I share mercy as a gift I have been given. Which leads us to the next question that people in Jesus' day asked, so who do I show mercy to? If mercy is a way of living in relationships, the logic went like this. Who am I in relationship that I'm supposed to show mercy to? And so the people in Jesus' day had asked some questions about, okay, so what are the broadest possible relationships that I'm in? And they landed on the word neighbor because the Bible uses this, love your neighbor. And so then they started asking themselves a logical question, so who's my neighbor? Because that's a really sneaky way of having to get out of being merciful to some people, right? If I can just prove to myself that they're not my neighbor, then I don't have to be merciful to them. You know, if somebody cuts me off, as long as they don't live within a block of my house, I can flip them off, right? I think that's what that means. And we laugh about that, and one of the famous stories in the Bible, the Good Samaritan, the essence of it, and I would challenge you to go read the story, but Jesus tells this wonderful story about a man who was robbed and beaten, and all these very religious folks walk by and ignore him, and then this guy who is from a foreign country that is really looked down upon by Jewish people in the day, comes by, takes care of the guy, brings him to some place where he can get better, pays his way, and Jesus says, who acted like a neighbor? Beautiful story, profound story, because it reminds us, it's not who is my neighbor that I'm supposed to be asking. I'm supposed to be asking the question, to whom can I become a neighbor? See the difference? I don't walk around in my life asking, do I have to be a neighbor to this person? Do I have to be a neighbor to that person? Do I need to be, in order to be a good Christian, do I have to act like a neighbor to that guy? The minute I ask that question, I am missing the whole point. Imagine if God asked, to be a good God, do I actually have to be merciful to you? Because the answer would be no. God was asking a very different question. He was saying, wait, who can I be merciful to? Where is an opportunity to show mercy? And he found you, and he gave you mercy when you didn't deserve it. And the challenge of mercy is that we don't ask, to whom do I have to be a neighbor, but to whom can I be a neighbor? To whom can I show mercy? But I do want to end on one key point that I think is important. There are times when mercy, that is something that feels good and feels an awful lot like mercy, isn't actually merciful. The point of mercy isn't to allow people to remain in situations where their health, maturity, or character can't handle it. So often you hear people say, give me another chance. And if they know you're a follower of Jesus, that is followed by, you know, if you're a good Christian, then you have to forgive me. Like, I, as a pastor, I hear this sort of thing. Give me another chance is often used by people who want to ignore the seriousness of their failures. Mercy doesn't ignore failure. It takes that a failure into account and accepts people as they actually are, not as they are pretending to be or as I would like to pretend they are. It takes into account who they really are. So, for example, if someone is married to a gambler, it isn't mercy to give that gambling spouse the credit card again. That's not mercy. It is mercy to treat that spouse with love and respect while they work on getting the healing that they need. See how that's different? One of those disempowers the hurting and broken person. The other empowers them. If you're friends with someone who's a liar, mercy isn't believing every word he or she says just because he or she apologized again. Mercy is accepting the person with their weaknesses, with their faults, with their failings, admitting that in your friendship, because of real weaknesses, there are limitations on that friendship that you wish weren't there, but that you accept. Accepting the person for who they actually are, not pretending they're different, not treating them as if they were something they are not. That's not mercy. That's self-delusion. And so we land on a fairly simple question tonight, and we're going to end fairly early because I want to give you time to talk about this. And the question is this: you're going to ask two questions in your discussion groups. Question number one is, from whom have you received mercy in your life? From whom have you received mercy? Not who have you, this is not a moment, by the way, to talk about all the people who should have given you mercy. Because we could all go there and we're not going to. This is a moment to ask, who has given you mercy? I always remember this moment. I've told this story before, but I remember this moment where my buddy in high school, his mom had asked me to relay a message that my buddy was supposed to take the bus home. And I forgot. And we all found out I forgot quite late that night when my friend didn't get home and my buddy's mom, who lived like 40 minutes from the school, not like 5 minutes down the road, who had 4 children. And so 3 of them she had to bundle into the car on a cold night when she had worked all day to go get her son because I had forgotten to deliver a message. That one failure cost her almost 2 hours of work between getting the kids in and out of the car and cost my friend all sorts of annoyance because he just kind of had to sit there at the school like waiting. And this was like pre-cell phone. It's not like they could text. She extended incredible mercy to me in that moment that I did not deserve. I had failed in our relationship. She had a reasonable right as her son's friend to expect me to deliver the message, and I totally failed. And I remember the moment I talked to her on the phone after all of this had happened. It was the next time I talked to her. And you know, she didn't say, you know what, it's okay, don't worry about it. She said, I forgive you. And then she never brought it up again. And when I showed up to her house, because I was hanging out with her buddy, I mean with my buddy, her son, she treated me like she always had, even though I had really made a mistake. That's mercy. So the question we have to ask is, who have we received mercy from? And then we'll ask ourselves the follow-up question, who do we need to give mercy to? And practically speaking, how do we do that?